Welcome to the Mission HR podcast. My name is Dennis Marr, and in this series I talk about the role of HR in an organization. In this episode, I'm looking at what do people think HR is about. I've done a lot of digging into this, and here I've got 8 of the most common notions that people seem to think of HR does. And that actually includes some HR people. Here we go. HR makes the organizational policies and rules. HR is the employee's champion. HR is about managing the people and hiring and firing them. HR is responsible for employee performance. HR is responsible for absence levels in the organization. HR takes the lead on organizational culture and morale. And HR administers salaries, pensions, medical insurance, and car fleets. And finally, HR organizes the Christmas parties and social events and wraps all the presents. Okay, let's have a look at each one and see how accurate these perceptions are. First is HR makes the organizational policies and rules. Well, HR certainly helps to present the statutory legal requirements of employment law in the organization, but the rules are set by management. All of this is usually in a handbook or on the company intranet. So if the rules say you can't take more than 2 weeks holiday at any one time, that's a company requirement. It doesn't mean that HR cooked it up. It was more likely based on requirements from operational departments or any of the others. Second, HR is the employee's champion, and there's a fair number of HR people who like to think of themselves as this, and in my opinion, at least, they've got it wrong. Unions and work councils are examples of employee champions. Every organization should have a proper laid-down procedure for grievances, discipline, and appeals. Both employees and managers should be fully aware of these procedures and encouraged to follow them. And this is an important area where HR should be communicating much better. In most grievance situations, HR has a crucial part to play in the formal process, and they will contaminate those processes by getting involved as the first port of call or at the wrong time. Many tribunal cases are launched because the organization's managers fail to follow their own rules. And conversely, many get thrown out because the employee also failed to follow the laid-down procedure. HR should not be seen as the tea and tissues room where people go to cry or have a good moan. Next, HR is about managing the people and hiring and firing them. The only people that HR should be managing, hiring and firing are other HR people, not anybody else's. HR will be involved in redundancy exercises to ensure compliance, but that's about it. Line management are responsible for hiring and firing, although HR should be responsible for making sure that those people are trained to do it correctly and compliantly. The practice of having an HR person attend every candidate interview is just a waste of time. Yet it's still an all too common practice, even though HR know next to nothing about the job, what is required, or the relevant departmental culture. Anything additional that needs to be known about the terms and conditions of employment in an interview can easily be attached to an email or link to the company recruitment page. HR is responsible for employee performance. Well, again, the only performance that HR is responsible for is that of the HR department, not any other department. HR has no first-hand knowledge of individual or departmental performance, other than that provided by line management. HR will certainly have performance statistics captured in an HR system, but those are for use by management for a variety of purposes. And by saying this, I'm already at odds with both the CIPD and SHRM descriptions of HR, which state that part of the function is managing employees or their performance. HR is responsible for absence levels in the organization. Well, it's not level. It's not responsible for levels of sickness in the organization, but they will be responsible for the procedure. Absence is often used as an HR metric, but there's little or no direct line of sight between HR activity and sickness absence. Although they shouldn't claim credit for reductions in absence, they certainly can't be blamed if there's a flu epidemic that loses a number of working days. Some HR departments have instigated return to work interviews, which are intended to reduce the number of casual days taken off by individuals. But looked at broadly, some major causes of absence are stress, workplace injury, musculoskeletal disorders. That comes from the Labour Force Survey, and the last two of which can be reduced by preventive measures. Workplace stress causes can be more difficult to separate from more general lifestyle causes, but it would be true to say that having good quality trained line management certainly helps to keep the problems down. And now HR takes the lead on organizational culture and morale. Job titles such as Head of People and Culture are becoming more commonplace, but although the HR department may be more symptomatic of an organization's culture than actually driving it, there's no getting away from the fact that culture starts at the very top. If the head of the fish is rotten, with unpunished bullying, harassment, expenses, fiddling, and blame apportioning, then these are going to cascade down. The state of organizational morale reflects the workforce's view of the culture. People either hunker down or leave when they realize their work and careers are directed by people they can't even respect or trust. Even the most brilliant HR people can't neutralize outlandish management behavior. But then again, they should always stand up against it, and not just bend with the prevailing wind, as has happened far too often in the past. Culture will not be created by putting motivational posters and mission statements on the office walls or appointing a chief happiness officer. Next is HR administers salaries, pension funds, medical insurance, and car fleets. Well, for me, salaries are the preserve of payroll. I'm not a supporter of payroll functions coming under the HR banner, although I know a significant number of HR heads believe it should be. Because the other things are people benefits, it's usually assumed that HR should be charged with the administration of them, and certainly in times gone by, HR was happy to take these on. But now, this type of work is seen as an obstacle to progression, and is, or should be, either extensively automated or handled by the providers liaising directly with the employees. And the last one on this list is HR organizes the Christmas parties and social events and wraps all the presents. I shouldn't really have to comment on this, but I know it still happens. It happened to me in the early years, and it's still going on. I've seen and heard some crazy things in recent years, I have to admit. So in conclusion, because of a lack of overall clarity, both inside and outside the department, HR has taken on irrelevant activities, and that's usually work that nobody else wants to do. Over time, of course, these activities go on to form a comfort zone, resulting in HR's apparent state of firefighting. And naturally enough, firefighting is a great explanation for missing deadlines and not making expected progress. Between what people think HR does but doesn't, and the things that HR does but shouldn't, there's not a lot of space to be effective or appreciated. It all results in a sort of a functional inferiority complex. It's no wonder so many HR professionals report being stressed, demotivated, and underappreciated. They are operating predominantly in a vacuum. In the next episode, I'll be looking at some things that HR really ought to be doing. So thanks for listening. And by the way, if you like what you hear, buy the book. If you don't like what you hear, buy the book anyway, and let's have a friendly discussion. This is me, Dennis Barmow, saying thank you for listening.